Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You're at the spot, you're at the place, the location where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, we have a naturopath, and we're going to talk to her about nutrition, and she's a health coach. I see all of those wonderful potions on her shelf back there. I'm going to ask her about that and then some. This is Sarah Brenchley, and she is calling us from or visiting with us from the land down under, you know, my second home, Australia. So we're going to see what's really going on. You know, I hear that those are some of the healthiest people in the world.
I'm not sure about that, but yeah, we are.
All right. Well, tell us how you show up in the world, Sarah.
So I'm a naturopath, I'm a nutritionist, and I have two arms. I basically focus on menopause, midlife women, and post-menopause, and supporting women through the transition of menopause and then and beyond, and getting excited about the later years in their life and stepping up and becoming leaders. So that's kind of my big passion.
Well, that's your jam. That's what you know how to do. I always wonder why they called it the menopause. It doesn't seem like a pause at all.
It's a bit like a cocoon. I think it's a bit like being a caterpillar. It's time to kind of reflect and reevaluate your life and then step out into the postmenopausal years as a butterfly. So that's why I think it's a pause. It's a really good time to just take a checklist to your life.
Exactly, because a lot of things are happening. It's also a rite of passage, you know. You go through a lot of mental, spiritual, physical, sexual, everything kind of just changes all at once. But you know, as women, we do this two or three times during the course of our lifetime. So, you know, it's different. How did you find yourself in this space?
As a naturopath, I found myself in this space through children. I was a fairly healthy person interested in you know, anything to do with a green and natural life. Had kids, and they both got unwell, and it got me kind of looking outside of normal medical ways of dealing with issues, because I didn't find that it was enough. And through that, I realized how important nutrition was, particularly. My son swallowed a padlock and damaged his esophagus. My daughter was a bit of a fruit fiend and ended up with thrush. And so I went down a whole path looking at specifically nutrition and how that can make a big difference, and learned so much from it, and realized that actually what we eat can be both poison and it can be our medicine. And that is the reason why it set me on that path. And then really the people that I work with were generally middle-aged women, and I was going through perimenopause myself and realizing that there really isn't very much information, particularly in that sort of 30 to 40 years age where things are starting to change. And menopause seems such a far so far away that you don't really think about it. And so a lot of women were confused about the symptoms that they were experiencing. And that's when I got really interested in perimenopause and menopause, because and that's grown now. I see that there's a lot more conversation about it. But back in 2017, when I really started to work in this area, there was really nothing. It was really not talked about at all.
Well, you know, young girls start their menses a lot earlier than they used to. I don't know. It used to be like 13, 14. Now they're starting at 10. You know, they're 10 and their bodies are changing. They're participating in sports, much more aggressive sports. You know, I didn't know, like gymnastics and track and field, that can really kind of stunt you from developing and going through this this thing that we call the change. Diet is so important. I will agree. When I was going through the menopause, I tell you, when I had those hot flashes, I was like, I don't know what I did to deserve this. This was absolutely crazy. But my spirit told me, start keeping a food journal. And I would keep a food journal and I would notice particular things that would set me off. Mm-hmm. I'd write down what it was, where I got it, you know, was it homemade or was it a fast food restaurant? Was it from a dispensary? Where it was from and how long it took me to react and how long it took me to recover. And it seemed like I figured it out for myself in about 2 weeks. Now, it didn't go away completely, but it subsided so much when I extracted that sugar and that caffeine and those carbs.
Yeah.
Anything that was like sugar related or a processed food like the lemonades and the lemonade dispensers. I don't know what's in that stuff, but it was really bad. So I love the taste of coffee. So I got decaf and then I had to realize, you know, the teas, but all the other preservatives that they put in food. So what are some things, what are some boxes that we should tick when we are trying to, you know, look at our nutrition as it relates to our hormone health and the menopause?
Yeah, and I think what you just said about actually tracking your own reaction to food is really important, because what someone reacts to, someone else might not react to. And as we get older, we can get get more sensitive to foods, and that reaction is kind of magnified. We felt rubbish before, but now we feel really rubbish. So tracking food, what you're eating, and your reactions to it is really important. Estrogen and progesterone, particularly our hormones, are really linked to our gut. It's kind of like a two-way street where our gut affects our hormones affects our gut. So that's one of the reasons why we can become more sensitive when we're kind of in our 40s and 50s. But the things that I think are the most important really is, well, there's three things that I think are important. Plants, eating enough plants. I'm not a vegetarian or a vegan, but we generally don't eat enough plants. And plants are really important because, one, they contain lots of vitamins and minerals that we need because they're the building blocks for our hormones. And two, they are usually rich in fiber, which is really important for our good gut bacteria. And our gut bacteria actually help to balance out our hormones, in particular estrogen. So getting fiber from our plants is really important. There's also things in plant called phytonutrients. And one of these is a kind of a plant estrogen. It's not really estrogen, but it mimics estrogen in our body. And again, it can help to balance. So if you don't have enough or you have too much, it can actually balance out that the estrogen in our body by tricking our body to think that we've got enough. So that's really important. And you get that in most plants anyway, but in particular things like lentils, and flax seeds, linseeds, any kind of bean.
Does not seed me. it does not make my flowers bloom. I don't, you know, flaxseed, I think I put too much flaxseed oil because, I mean, not flaxseed oil, flax seeds, they just exploded in the juice that I make. So you have to kind of have a combination. Get some good recipes. I go to a vegan restaurant now. When I try to cook vegan food, it tastes like straw. When I go to this restaurant, it's absolutely delicious. But they know how to put the right combinations together. Talking about
it helps the spices, and I think that's the kind of the important thing, is giving it flavor. So it doesn't even have to be vegan. It just means making sure you have lots of plants on your plate, and that can be beans, it can be fruit, it can be veg, it can be grain, it can be anything that's a plant. As long as you've got plants alongside, if you eat meat, your meat, then you'll get enough of those nutrients that you need.
I've been reading Fit for Life, and they're really talking about natural hygiene and also food combinations. How you put the foods together can make a big difference in how you digest. Your circadian rhythm, how you sleep, makes a big difference. And supplements. I don't know. Some people are pro supplements. Some people say that you can get a lot naturally from, you know, your plant-based foods. But I'm on this turmeric thing now, and it seems to be making a little difference. The brain fog, you know, you're slow. You don't have energy, lethargic. Plus, we do this exercise hand to mouth so much, and we don't allow our bodies to really digest. Give us a few suggestions, maybe with regards to considering additional supplements that we can take. And, you know, and this is just general, Brains. If you're taking something that your doctor has suggested or recommended, continue with that regimen, because this is a lifestyle change. This is a quick fix. This is something that you really want to incorporate, and also you can incorporate with your families. But I see all of the little tinctures in the back there. Do you make your own natural supplements?
I don't make supplements, but they're herbs. So I do have some herbs in the back that I make up formulas for. So in New Zealand and Australia, I think it's slightly different. So I'm a medical herbalist as well as a naturopath. So they tend to go together in New Zealand and Australia, whereas I think in the US, they tend to be more separate. So I do make my own. I also buy fluid extracts, and then I make up my own formulas. So I tend to give that out rather than in a kind of tablet form. And that is really individual. So it depends on what's going on. So some women are really, really stressed. And so things like withania is a fantastic herb that I might give them in as a liquid form, or skullcap, oat straw. I love tea. So I make some really nice teas up with oat straw and passion flower. And I love teas for women because it slows us down, because it's really easy to take drops of herbs. But if you can actually spend time with the ritual of making up a herbal tea, then you're getting that me time as well. And I think that's something that we're lacking. And stress is so important for hormone balance, because when we're stressed, our hormones just don't function properly. And it really mucks up our whole hormone system. So I love giving people teas, getting them to slow down and make a tea and sit down and actually enjoy it.
I know that's what I always tell my story, how I brought back herbal teas from China and started to hallucinate because I took too much. So you have to be careful. It is plant medicine.
Absolutely. And it's always really important to check first, because some herbs, even if it's natural, whether it's a herb in a tablet form or herbs in a tea form, they do clash with medication. So it's always really important that you get advice before you start taking a natural herb or supplement if you're on medication, because otherwise it can actually stop the medication working or give you side effects, because it kind of ramps up the medication too.
So I see what you're I see that what you have on your shelf back there are droplets. Is that the quickest way? I think that might be the quickest way outside of a topical to ingest, is put a couple drops under your tongue.
Yeah, so sometimes I do drops. So I usually do a mix in a little bottle, and sometimes it's drops, or sometimes it's just 2 to 5 mils a couple of times a day that people take a little shot, and that's absorbed really quickly. So and I will give that to, usually if anything to do with stress or sleep or hormone balance, there's some really good herbs for that.
Yeah, you know, men go through the menopause too, and their testosterone level shrinks. But what they usually do is run out and get a sports car and a young woman.
And if you go to the gym and pump up some muscle, it will do the same thing.
They do. And I don't know, do you work with men at all? Do the menopause?
I don't. Usually, because I find the men that I do see tend to get dragged by their wives to see me for other things. Alongside what I do, I actually work for a university, and I work with people that have had stroke. And so I work with a lot of men who have had stroke to try and prevent them from having another stroke. So that's kind of another arm of what I do. And that's when I really work with men, but not in my private clinic. I tend to work with only women.
Well, tell us a little bit about the work that you do with stroke patients, just kind of changing the subject a little bit, because strokes are very individualized, but they are so debilitating. Strokes are what? Explain that to my brains for those that don't know.
So it's usually when there's a clot. So there's lots and lots of different types of stroke, but usually there's a blood clot actually in one of the blood vessels that go to the brain. So it's almost like when you have a heart attack, there's a clot that's in one of the blood vessels to the heart, so your heart doesn't work. Stroke is when it happens in the brain. And so it can be temporary, where the clot can pass through and it just causes a bit of damage. Sometimes that's called a TIA. If it's a stroke, sometimes the clot is there and then they need to give medication to actually break that clot up, or to widen a blood vessel so the clot can pass through. And it can cause damage can be temporary, can be permanent, depends on how big the stroke is. Usually people find that they kind of disassociate from their arms and their legs, so they might look at their hand and not realize that that's their hand. It feels like it's someone else's hand, or their face can actually start to droop. They slur their speech. What they think they're saying and what they're actually saying are two different things, because what they're saying is just gobbledygook. Fatigue is massive with nearly everybody that I've worked with. So the study is looking at whether health coaching can help prevent a secondary stroke, because if you have a stroke, the risk of having another stroke within a month or two is really high. And fatigue is massive. People have a stroke, it's exhausting. And a lot of the time, because it's invisible and it's in their head, they feel like they should be able to get back, go straight to work a week after they've had a stroke. But if you broke your arm or your leg and you're in a cast, you'd rest it for 2 or 3 months before you knew you could move it again. And because you can see the cast, it's okay to rest, but we can't see the injury that we have to ourselves and our blood vessels. So a lot of people get frustrated that they are so tired and that they need to rest lots because they just want to get back into the way they were before. And there's quite a recovery period to go through. So I support people in that. I look at their diet, give them support around their diet, help them manage stress, because stress plays a massive role alongside diet and not exercising, but stress is massive. And there's a huge amount of people with really horrendous stressful episodes or events that have gone on in their life that has exacerbated and created that stroke. So it's about trying to help them manage that.
So tell me a little bit about the program that you run that you help individuals.
Yeah. So the program, I've got a couple of different programs that I run. The first one is a 3-month program, and we look at diet, and it's very Mediterranean diet based. So I'm trying to encourage people to have lots of plants, lots of healthy fats, good amounts of healthy protein, because I find women generally don't eat enough protein. And as we age, the protein in our muscle kind of goes down a little bit. So we need a lot more protein in our diet. And we're looking at that. We're looking at exercise. Are we moving our bodies? Are we sleeping well? Do we have good routines around sleep? Looking at what's in our house. So there's lots of chemicals from the products that we use to clean our house or the products we put on our face. And a lot of those can actually disrupt our hormones, and that can exacerbate our symptoms. And also mindset, which is massive, because as I said at the beginning, when we're in this phase of our life, it's just like when you go through puberty, when you get married or you have babies, that these are all periods in our life that are natural transitions, but it's where we look at who we used to be and who we want to be, and it's almost like a limbo time. Mm-hmm. And so menopause is another limbo time where we can do the same. We reflect on the life we've had. Have we achieved what we want to achieve? What do we want to achieve over the next 30 years? And let's get excited about that. And I really believe that postmenopausal time is a time where women should step up and become leaders in their community, in their family, wherever. We need to not be invisible. I know society likes older women to be invisible, and I really feel like we need to step up and go, no, we're not going to be invisible. We've got something to say. We've got experience. We've got wisdom. This is our time. So a lot of what I do is around the mindset of that, of reevaluating and creating the life you want, and also being confident enough to step up and be a leader in whatever situation you're in.
Right, right, right. There's no time limit on it, going through the menopause. You could have fibroids, or you could have just depletion of your hormones. You could have had a hysterectomy. You could have had one ovary taken, both ovaries taken, the cervix out, a cancer. All of these things can send you in a menopausal state pre 50 years old.
Someone could start around 35, and it depends on whether you've had some health conditions, like you said, cancer, you can have surgery. So someone will go through that menopause really early, but sometimes women will just start to see these symptoms of perimenopause at around 35 years old, and you can experience that perimenopause for 10 years before you actually hit the menopause when your periods stop. And even that can be a bit, you could not have your period for 11 months, suddenly get your period, and then you're back to square one again. So
I know I was telling somebody else that was on my show, my girlfriend's pregnant. She's 46. Yeah. And she thought that, she was having early menopause signs, and she did a oopsie.
Yeah. It happens. It happens.
So you have to be careful with that. So tell us some fun things about you. What do you like to do there in Australia for recreation? What do you do for your personal exercise?
What do I do? So I've got a son who's 16 years old who's really into bodybuilding. So he's dragging me along to the gym, and I do lots of weights. Weights are really, really important for men of our age. So he's my trainer at the moment. So I go to the gym several times a week with him. But I love kayaking. That's something that I do in the summer. I kayak quite a lot. In where we live, there's lots of rivers and the sea, and so I kayak. And I live in a fairly rural location, so I garden a lot. I've got animals, and so I just spend a lot of time outside, to be honest. And then I play. I make creams, and I make witchy potions, and just have fun with plants.
Well, that's wonderful. Do you grow the plants there on your property?
I grow some. We live in a kind of really, it's not mountainous, but it's very, very, very hilly, and it's right near the coast. So some plants don't do particularly well. We have a veggie garden and an orchard, and we've learnt what works and what doesn't. So I grow some, but most of what I grow, it's just because I like looking at it. I tend to buy dried herbs and bring it in and then use that, because I just don't have the time to garden the way I'd like to at the moment.
So now, how do you extract? I noticed that. What do you do? Do you take, like, we'll use lavender as an example. Yeah. Use lavender, do you boil it, and then you take it in a strainer and you extract whatever you can get? Because this probably takes a whole lot of lavender to probably get this much of the actual extract. And then you mix it with the base.
Yeah, so what I mean, I don't tend to make lavender oil. I do have a still, but I don't, it just takes too long and I don't have enough. So I tend to buy white oils, but if I've got any herbs, it depends on the herbs, then I can make an oil. And what I usually do is I put the dried herbs, if I picked it, I dry them, and then I actually put that in oil, and I'll boil it up with oil and then strain out the herb, and then I've got the oil, and then I use that as my base. So then I'll add other things to it to make creams and salves, and I do that with things like chamomile and calendula in particular, and comfrey, and there's a few native herbs we have in New Zealand that I use as well. So that's what I'll do, is I'll make an oil, and then I'll use that oil either to make a balm, or I add that to other things to make creams.
Well, that is amazing. So you make creams, so you make topicals, you make oils. Do you also, have you created a cookbook or a recipe book that you might share with people and give them some basic tips and information and just some basic things that we can try? We can't go full throttle unless we're consulting with someone like you, Sarah, because again, as I've indicated, that these plants are also medicine, and you want to be careful what you put in combination with the westernized philosophy versus an eastern philosophy versus the other cocktails that we put in our body. There could be other prescription drugs, antidepressants, alcohol, you know, recreational drugs. So all of these things play a factor in that. Wouldn't you agree, Sarah?
100%. And usually I don't give herbs unless I actually have a consultation with someone, so that I know exactly what they're taking, medicine, supplements, everything, before I'd recommend, because there are some herbs that I just would not recommend to anyone if they were on medication. Or hormone therapy or contraception, I wouldn't even go there. So the recipe books I have are more to do with diet. And I have some recipes that, again, I have groups, so I'll give a recipe book in a group. It's not been published, so I tend to give it within my group. I do run something called Ameno Chef, so I work alongside an organisation called Menopause Experts Group, and they have recipes where I teach cooking classes, and I teach menopause-friendly cooking within these classes, and then most of this stuff.
Give me an example of what's menopause friendly in a diet. I mean, you know, I know that you say plenty of vegetables, but what like combination? Do we cut back on the russet potatoes and eat more sweet potatoes or more purple potatoes? I just was in a lecture with the doctor that did the zone, the blue zone.
Oh, yeah, the blue zones. Yes.
And it was very, very fascinating. But again, you know, I had to look at it with a side eye because it's great. But these people have lived in these rural areas. They don't have cars, so they didn't have any choice but to walk. But they found that walking really helped, a sense of family and camaraderie, yes, and community, but also their diet. Now, the Mediterranean diet. Everybody's big on the Mediterranean diet. When I went to Europe, you know what I found it was? Olive oil, pasta, veggies, but the coup de grace is that it's from farm to table. Here in the United States, I'm telling you, our food sources are absolutely tainted with all types of steroids, antibiotics, growth hormones, all these things. So it's really hard for us to adhere to that. And you know that we're the obesity capital of the world, and it's the inflammation. It's the inflammation in this in our system. And I know that I'll drink a carbonated beverage. It's good to me. I'll get another one. I feel like somebody stuck an air hose up my butt. I'm just as bloated. And then I'll have some water, and it seems like it even expands it even more. It takes 2 or 3 days to come off that bloat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So inflammation is really the cause of disease, everyone is telling me, because, you know, your organs, and when you have that belly fat, you're pushing other key organs in the wrong places. So exercise is important, and you don't have to go to the gym. Everybody's not a gym person. Go for a walk.
That being doing something where you're moving your body, where you just, it feels good. So you could be gardening. I mean, a lot of people in the blue zones, they're not going to the gym. They're just working their garden, or they're going for a walk, or, you know, housework. You're going to be moving your body. So as long as you're moving your body, and if you have opportunities to walk up the stairs rather than going up an elevator, then you do that. So it's trying to find opportunities to move your body in a way that fits in with your life. That's what's important.
Now, are you married? Do you have children?
I am. I'm married, and I've got 2 kids, 16-year-old boy and a 19-year-old daughter.
Okay. Now, this lifestyle of incorporating nutrition and herbs, and do they buy into it?
They do and they don't. They go through phases. It's quite funny. So my daughter has become, she's really keen on eating as well as possible. And so she, I mean, we all eat meat. None of us are vegetarian. She'll eat vegetables whenever she can. She eats fruit. When she's air stewardess, so she travels on Qantas, and so as much as she can, she will eat as healthy as she can when she can. I mean, she's on shift work, so it's not ideal.
Right.
And she'll take herbs and supplements just to kind of, well, she knows she's not going to eat particularly well because she's traveling, and she'll take a multivitamin mineral and things like that. So she's quite keen. My son is really different in that he's really interested in supplements for big muscles, but he's not necessarily interested in eating vegetables. So he'll eat lots of meat, and then we'll be really picky about it. He might have a few peas, but that's about it. If it's green, he doesn't want to touch it. So they're both, one's into the eating well but won't exercise. One wants to do nothing but exercise and take supplements and doesn't particularly want to eat well if he can. So it's, yeah. But as they've got older, they've got more interest. If they get sick, they'll say to me, can you give me something? So
it's a lifestyle. This is not a quick fix. This is for the long haul. If you're going to be taking something, your body has to get acclimated. Just like anything else. Once it starts functioning and feeling good, then you feel like I don't have to take it anymore. And this can be a little expensive, you know, herbal medicine. It's not cheap just because it comes from the ground. As we said, we have to talk about how you extract it, what you mix it with, what is the quantity, you know, what is the quality. Like Sarah says, sometimes she'll purchase her oils. She's not necessarily growing all of them. So you have to have a consistent vendor. You have to have trial and error. I would suggest that when you do it, Brains, if you're going a natural, holistic approach, that you try a little bit at a time. Give yourself 4 or 5 days to see if you get a rash, if there's an allergic reaction, if you get diarrhea, if you get constipation, if you start to throw up. Then you can eliminate things.
Start small and then build up, because sometimes you could take a big amount and then you react. And doing one thing at a time is really good, because sometimes you can buy supplements that have got lots of things in and you don't necessarily know what it is you've reacted to, because so I like things that have got only one or two or three ingredients in, because then that way it's a lot easier to work out what it is that you might be reacting to.
That's perfect. So tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Sarah, if they want to join your group. And sure, get more information and, you know, work with her brains. You might be able to get one of those cookbooks.
That'd be great. So I'm predominantly on Facebook. If you go to find Sarah Brenchley Wellbeing, you'll find my business page there, Sarah Brenchley on Facebook as well. And my website is sarah-brenchley.com, and you'll find me there. And there's a links page. If you go to sarah-brenchley.com/links, then there's a whole bunch of resources there that you'll find as well.
Well, I think that you are so heady and so useful, and I am working on my nutrition. I'm even going to the point of doing hypnotic tapes and meditation tapes at night to really try to embed it in my subconscious mind so that my head takes control instead of my mouth and my tongue. Thank you so much for being here on the Edge, Sarah Brenchley. This is what I need you to do, brains. Outside of get your nutrition, I need you to go like, love, share, and subscribe. Like, love, share, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. That's how I stay fluid. That's how I keep giving you all the information that you deserve. Thank you so much, Sarah. Come back and see me again, okay?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Bye, brains.
Bye-bye.